We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been our great pleasure for a long time on the first Wednesday at 10 o'clock to talk about food and cooking with the guy that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And I would like to point out here, ladies and gentlemen, this is purely an honorary title. No discount at Bed Bath & Beyond is attached to this.
No, but thank you for the people who call up and recognize my name.
They do know him. He's often accosted in the checkout line at the grocery
always,
store.
Always.
And so he's been doing this for a long time. We always have fun when he is here, picking a topic, sometimes a particular dish, or it may be depending upon what time of year it is. There might be something that seems to, to make sense at that time. And he seemed to be thinking that we really like our winter cooking. And when we come into the fall, I'm sure that we're all starting to think about, well, wouldn't it be great to bake, stew, braise, make soups, make chili, all that sort of stuff. And while that's good, we're now here as we get through the winter and closer to spring. I'm sure that there are people who are thinking, well, that's good, but I'm kind of getting a little tired of that. We're a long way away from farmer's market and a lot of great fresh produce. And the one thing you can rely on is where you go to the store, well, there's still going to be lots of things like turnips and carrots and potatoes and beets and parsnips, all those good rooty vegetables. So then the question is, okay, well, you can get all those things. Well, what might you do with those? And is there some twist you can put on that where you would say, get some new tastes or new way of dealing with it, so that it would be kind of like it was new again. So I think he's been doing a little vegetable roasting. We'll talk about that. And of course, any and all questions, I know that maybe that's a little vague, any and all questions, comments, recipes, cooking stories are certainly welcome. So 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email right to will-talk@illinois.edu. So any point here, you can join us. Well, once again, thank you very much for being here.
You may well wonder why I chose this subject. It was exactly, I was feeling sorry for myself, and I was at the grocery store, and I said, why do I ignore the few vegetables? There are a few vegetables there. Mm-hmm. And I have been, of course, I'm a great fan of watching television. And Anne Burrell likes to grill on her little grill, and they're doing more of that. But you don't want to go outside and grill. Most of what everyone is doing. Oh, let's see. I think even Paula Deen decided to. She was going to grill these vegetables, get them going, and so that was in the back of my mind. Well, what would I do if I did that? And I then. Jamie Oliver was grilling vegetables, but they were just vegetables that were heated up and grilled and seared off in a way in the ovens. And I said, well, let's push this a little bit farther because I would like some tastes with this. And when you just grill vegetables and sprinkle more olive oil on them and serve them, it's kind of still that bland sort of thing. So I made up a sauce. It's a vinaigrette with mustard in it, and some more things we can talk about. But then I thought, wow, wait, here's the German hot potato salad, which we've known for a long time. Some of us didn't. I mean, I remember learning about hot potato salad. I thought, but when you're looking for something and you do have that in your mind. So I found some fingerling potatoes, which I'm very fond of, And I chose some Brussels sprouts. I only got about 12 because I wanted a small amount. Mm-hmm. And a turnip looked awfully good. So here I am, turnips, potatoes, and Brussels sprouts. I blanched them for about 5 minutes each, all in the same, and then put them on a flat sheet pan, sprinkled them with olive oil, stuck them in a very hot oven, somewhere around 375. I think sometimes they're even roasting them at 400, but I don't like mine going that high, mm-hmm. that high. So I roasted these vegetables, and it took at 20 minutes I turned them over so they would be on the other side. Ooh, they were looking good. So in another 10 minutes they were done, and I made up this very powerful sauce and sauced them and said, well, there they are. Nice big, they were rich. They were just a little bit. Toasted on the corners and the edges, and I felt very smug that I had put all this together. And I tasted it, and it really tasted so good. It was beyond what I expected. And I just laughed and I said, "Well, you know, that's the whole meal. I don't need anything else, because here's green vegetables and starchy vegetables and I remember Mother used to cook." Turnips with potatoes. So I was used to those two flavors as a combination, but all roasted. It was really wonderful. And then, of course, I had some left over. Well, you know what? It becomes vegetables a la Grec, and you have it as a salad the next day or later that evening in some cases, if you want to do. But it seemed to stretch it farther and give a real exciting taste to it. So I decided that I would call in and say, well, here's what I thought we would do. And that was about 10 o'clock. I called and left my message here at the station. And at 1:30, I go in and turn on the new sister shows of WILL on Create. And lo and behold, people had never heard of Capriel and John's Kitchen. Oh, you have to do this with Brussels sprouts and be sure to put mustard in the sauce. I thought, well, one of two things. Either the zeitgeist is working or and we've done this every time. I've told you about how many times the next day magazines will come, because it's all on the first of the month. And sure enough, that's the feature of the week. So I think that probably that's close enough.
Right. Well, this, ever since it came up on some program, I guess I've been meaning to try roasting Brussels sprouts.
Yes.
And I just haven't gotten around to it. And I think it's maybe just because my experience with Brussels sprouts
has been not
decidedly
pleasant.
Not pleasant.
Mushy.
Yes. Yes.
Overboiled. Bitter.
Bitter, I think, particularly for me. Yeah.
Roasting and grilling. I mean, I have to give credit to grilling as well. But roasting is a different process. It's a warm heat that surrounds the thing rather than direct heat that browns it or burns it, whatever happens to you. And I was surprised, and I sort of put on the gloves. I was going to fight those Brussels sprouts because I'm exactly the same as you. If I was given a choice, I would not have them. And yet, here they are, one of the things that stays in the garden in the wintertime. And I do remember in England going to it was a fancy pub that they were famous for their food. And, she said, I went out and I was going to get the kale, but she says, I chose the Brussels sprouts. And there they were, growing in the snow. And I thought, well, if people like them that much, there must have. But that was also 1974, and I haven't done anything about it until last week.
Well, better late than never.
Better late than never.
I've got a caller here, someone who's been patiently waiting,
good.
So let's talk with them. In Lafayette, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
For some reason, I'm remembering my mother-in-law who boiled up peas or some vegetable in an immense kettle filled with water.
Yes.
And I seem to remember that that's wrong, and perhaps you can confirm me, the cooking water, I seem to remember, leaches out a good bit of the nutrition. So you, against that, you should restrict it and drink the remaining cooking water. Is that correct?
Well, yes. We've been told a lot that the cooked vegetables leaches out in, and that's if I think that's if you boil them for quite a while. You actually boil them to soften them and get them down to another texture. I hadn't thought of taking the liquid and using it as not as a beverage but as another single thing. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. There are, everyone said all the vitamins and minerals are in that. But here's something that me and the doctor talked about last week, because I was concerned about vitamin K in green leafy vegetables, and so they said, "Oh, eat them raw." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, for some funny unknown reason, vitamin K increases when you cook it." So I said, no, it gets in the water and goes away. He says, "I know, but not in this case." So in some cases, you increase the vitamins by cooking it. And this is new information that came to me.
Tomatoes.
Oh, yes. Now, this roasting technique warms them up, changes their texture, and gives you a different object to munch on instead of what you're used to. And that was the part that I was rather interested and pleased with.
Well, what do you think of restricting the cook water and then drinking it afterwards?
Oh, I think there's nothing wrong with that. I don't boil vegetables that much and that long. I generally just blanch them, and that's only about 5 minutes in boiling water, 3 to 5 minutes.
Well, and boiling was always simplest, and it brings me to something else.
Yes.
Can you think of something different to put on or with sweet potatoes? I just boil it and then sprinkle cinnamon.
With sweet potatoes, let's see. I remember making sweet potatoes with star anise. That's a very, very strong flavor that is a Chinese seed, a little star-shaped seed. It's an anise. I don't think it's the same as fennel, but star anise and butter we put in the mashed sweet potatoes. I believe you could choose other herbs and spices, and I would look even to coriander and cumin. I would look to the Indian spices because they give a lot. And I do know I have a friend who uses cardamom, but that's kind of from a Finnish or Swedish point of view. But yes, other herbs can go into that. You might you mash it up, and you might enjoy a goodly amount of chopped parsley. The parsley is a good fresh flavor, and chives would be very good in sweet potatoes. So you'd either serve them mashed and straight that way, or you could make little patties of them and bake them and have a twice baked sweet potato. So play around with that. You'll find things that you'll like. But I was just feeling sorry for myself, and I was trying to make a treat for me, and I did.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. Now, I know that there are people that take a rather militant position when it comes to cooking vegetables and say that the more that you cook them, the more you are leaching out nutrients.
Yes.
And so there are people who are really strong advocates of having all your vegetables raw.
Raw, yes.
Which I guess if you can do that. I think, though, probably a lot of nutritionists would say, look— we want you to eat your vegetables. So don't sweat it. Now, myself, I mean, I kind of think maybe one of the best ways to cook vegetables is to steam them.
Yes, it is.
And so you probably don't, you're going to, some of the stuff maybe end up in the water that you use to steam them. But it's not, it's probably not the same as boiling them. And I even think that, you know, you can, if you cut vegetables, many of them like a carrot, if you cut it fairly thin, you can, and you want to cook it and by boiling it, about 3 minutes will do you. And
yeah.
They don't get too mushy, and they should still pretty much be good. And, you know, as I say, I think probably the nutritionist would say, look, just eat them.
I want more than just that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can do that, and that's fine. But that's the thing I was wanting to do is to enrich the make it a little headier than just, well, what'd you do? Well, I boiled up this and I got that. Throw this on and slop that. You know, no paying no attention to an increased flavor.
Well, the roasting is just the magical.
Roasting thing. Is magic. Roasting it is just, not grilling, and roasting is not frying. It's another thing that happens. And I think one of the reasons that some people might hold back from that is it takes about 30 or 40 minutes. And we often say, oh, I haven't got that much time to do that, and so you won't do it. But I sat there and watched them. I set my alarm, and so okay, after 20 minutes, let's see what you got. Well, they needed a little bit more, and so I took 30 minutes to roast them. However, let me quickly say to your carrots, blanch the carrots. They don't have to be softened completely. Blanch the carrots. You can either cut them in little strips or the little round pennies, and then take them out of the blanching water. Put them in an aluminum foil packet and sprinkle them with
thyme.
Tarragon.
Tarragon.
Tarragon and vodka.
Okay.
And a little butter. And then wrap that packet up and put them in the oven. That's a good one. That is a good one. And it increases everything. Yeah. Then they cook a little bit longer in a steaming atmosphere in that packet.
I have done something like that with carrots, and have actually used thyme, and done the same thing, where you enclose them in foil. So in fact, yes, they are steaming, and pretty much cook them that way. And then when you're close to where you think that they're done, then what you can do is open the packet up.
Right, you can do that,
and then give them another 5 minutes or.
I would
something
put some butter
like
in
that.
Them then at that particular point. But tarragon and
tarragon.
Vodka,
now that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought tarragon and vodka. Let us continue.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll go to Belgium. Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I know you like me to stay on topic, but I've got a question to ask. And
sure.
I've really never noticed it around. You know, we've gotten a lot of our things we use in cooking from the Western Hemisphere here a lot.
Yes.
But you almost never hear of an indigenous restaurant you never hear of a Lakota restaurant or a Ojibwe restaurant, or you never hear of that style of food. Has anybody ever cooked their cuisine?
Yes, they have. If I can get all my words straightened around here. Beverly Cox. Spirit of the Harvest. That is a book that is full of all kinds of recipes from Native American sources. She authored several books, Cooking of the West, and the Spirit, and then she did some South American cooking. But the first one that she put out was Spirit of the Harvest, mm-hmm. And it is full of recipes that are of the type that you're describing. The only place that I have ever had a Native American style of cooking is in New Mexico. In restaurants you can get. And they don't have to be run by Navajo, but the Navajo make an awfully good lamb stew that I know that you can buy frequently in New Mexico. But those aren't in big fancy restaurants. They're just in small roadside stands. So other than having to go there, do look up The Spirit of the Harvest. I have that book, and I have enjoyed it very much. There's a lot because they deal a lot with squash and beans.
Yes.
And potatoes and tomatoes,
yep.
And those are new world foods and ground nuts of a certain sort. There are simple ways, not simple ways, but there are ways of using various nuts. I think one very American way is to take acorns. But then they have an acid in them of some sort that makes them very strong. So you have to leach the strength out of them and then dry them and grind them up and you make a flour. I do know that is an old recipe, but I think to answer your question, yeah, look up The Spirit of the Harvest.
But you've never gone to a Lakota restaurant?
No.
or an Ojibwe restaurant?
No, I have not.
It doesn't ever seem to exist, does it?
Well, in small towns and sort of like, as I say, sort of like roadside places.
Hmm.
But you're absolutely right. But they are cooked that way in the home.
Uh-huh.
And this recipe book is a very large book. And so there are a lot of tastes that you would enjoy learning about. But you'd have to make them yourself.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
And I'm sure that there also are a lot of American cuisines that have been influenced by Native American methods. I'm sure that it influenced the way people cook in New Orleans and
yes.
probably has also in the Southwest.
And the Southwest especially.
Yeah.
Yes, in New Orleans there is a mixture. There is quite a mixture of Native styles. With certain combination, the use of the sassafras root, I think is Native American. Let's see. Sometimes you can get Native foods at certain fairs. I know Cheyenne Days in Cheyenne. We go to the Indian village and eat the food in the Indian village, which is fried bread with some beans on top of it. I mean, call it what you will. I don't know what you call it. You just ask for the fry bread. And that's made, I know, there.
Yeah.
But in answer to the former person here, I don't know of a restaurant that deals with that fact.
We have a couple of callers here, are the guests this morning. It's the first Wednesday, so that means we're talking about food. That's been our great pleasure for a long time. And the guest is the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he picks a topic, something that he's been thinking about, maybe something that he's been making. We've talked about different kinds of cooking and different styles of cooking, and depending upon the time of year, there might be something that suggests itself. So we're not tied to that topic, but that gives us something to start with. And this time around, he had done some vegetable roasting that he was pretty happy about, and he talked about how, you know, you go to the grocery store or wherever you buy your produce, you look around and you think, well, what do we got here to work with? Well, we still have root vegetables. We have the winter vegetables.
Well, that's why you have a root cellar.
That's what got us back in the day.
You're right.
In the old days.
That's what got us through.
So maybe we're talking about, well, what can you do that would be maybe new, a little different, get some new exciting tastes in there for your potatoes, beets, turnips, parsnips.
Rutabagas.
Carrots, you know, all those sorts of things. Parsnips. My Mrs. Inn, she has a thing for parsnips. I don't know where that came from because I'm sure growing up she never ate a parsnip, but she likes the parsnips. And we certainly have roasted those, put them in soups and stews.
For parsnips, I like to boil them and mash them up and only put cream in them. Oh, are they good? They're minty. I don't know where.
There's some odd. I was thinking. Now, how do you describe the taste of a parsnip? And I'm actually not sure how even.
Well,
to...
it's that peppery mint.
Maybe that. Yes. Yes. It has a certain, and it's a little kind of a woody, almost resinous.
Well, there is a core in the parsnip, which is a little coarser than the outside,
yeah, and which you can
mash it up. You just puree that and butter. And cream, rather.
Yeah.
Cream. Good cream, not a half and half.
Bash neeps. That's a very, it's an English thing.
Oh, yes, yes, that's it. That's where I had it.
All right. And just before we get too far away from it, someone had made the suggestion, and I actually had thought about this, that with you're looking for something to pair with your sweet potatoes, and you can do it, a little bit of maple syrup.
Yes.
It's a nice taste with sweet potatoes.
It is a good taste.
Yeah.
But real maple syrup.
Well, should be good. Yeah. Yes, good maple syrup.
I'd probably end up putting brown sugar on it, but real maple syrup would be it. But I have to watch the sweets on that, so I don't think.
All right. Well, let's talk with somebody.
Folks to talk to.
In Champaign County. Someone here is calling on a cell phone. Line one. Hello. The caller there, line one. Well, okay. How's about we try Vermilion County, line two. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Oh, I'm on a cell phone, too, so I hope it's all right.
Well, you sound just fine.
Great. Well, I wanted to address the eating Native American food.
Yes.
And we went, now this is 4 years ago, and we went to Washington, D.C., and they have this Native American museum that's wonderful.
Oh, yes.
And within there is a food court that will end your search for this kind of food, because it's a large place and there are many, many different places, different tribes, different sections of the country, the Northwest, the Southwest, you can imagine. And they cook up all these different Native American foods. And we were there for several days. We attended different things and went to other places to see things, but we always returned to that food court to try yet another sample of Native American cooking.
Yes, of that experience, what did you like the best?
Oh, it's hard to say. You know, if you were thinking Southwest, that was great. There were beans and things that were so tasty.
Yeah.
And then the Northwest, they had fish.
Yes.
It's hard to say there was a favorite. We just we ate ourselves silly in there. So if you wanted to, you know, and then you're in the area, I know it's not very close to here, but that's a good place to start.
Well, it acts as what they like to call a living museum,
right?
And so the foodstuffs are a great part of that show.
Right, and I just wanted to recommend that.
Yes, well, that good.
Don't miss it.
That's. I'm glad you responded to that. That's very good.
Thank you.
All right. Yes. Well, thank you.
I must go. Bye.
Other calls are certainly welcome. We are just a hair past the midpoint, 333-9455, the Champaign-Urbana number. We have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. So that's 800-222-9455. You can send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Whatever you want to do, maybe you have a recipe to share or a question or a story or what have you. As we're talking here, we're at this transitional stage.
Waiting for spring.
Waiting for spring and thinking about, well, what new can we do with your basic staple items that are easy to put your hands on? And so we'd focus on root vegetables, on winter vegetables, right? You know, in the cooking magazines, when they first start coming out in the fall, that's going to be a big thing. Oh, isn't this great and new? And now we're going to roast these winter vegetables, and we're going to have it as a side for everything. And now that we're in March, it's like, yeah, okay, fine. Those are good. But have you got a tomato? No, not really. People can call in and give us a call. We actually have made a couple times now a recipe that my wife came across that's quite good, I thought, and I should have actually thought to get it. It is a lentil soup that has balsamic roasted vegetables in it.
Oh.
And so it's one of those soups where what you do is you take your vegetables, and I think we made this with sweet potato, parsnip, and carrot, I think was what we used.
Okay.
And I suppose you could use whatever you want. So you cut them up into chunks, and then you dress that with you put in some olive oil, some balsamic vinegar, a little salt and pepper, and put down on a baking sheet and put it in the oven and bake them. And I think that and roast them. And I think in this particular case, you don't roast them real long. Maybe 20 minutes or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Not terribly, terribly long. And then you make up your soup. And in this case, it's a chicken stock. And I'm not sure what all it's got in it. It may have a little thyme. Seems to me like it would be a good thing to put in there. And lentils and possibly a tiny bit of tomato. Essentially you can finesse that any way that you want. But you cook that. And then when the lentils are cooked, however you like them to be, then the vegetables go in. And then you just cook it long enough so that the vegetables will be heated through.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And it may be a little on the sweet side. And I suppose if you wanted, you could either use potatoes or put in fewer sweet potatoes or omit the sweet potatoes at all. But it's a very nice taste. It's very savory, and it has a little sweetness to it. And the vegetables have a particular kind of texture that would be different than if you had actually just cooked them
just
in
cooked them.
The
yeah.
soup.
Yeah.
And for me, all those flavors, they come together really nicely, and it's a great thing.
I want to make one addition to that.
Yes.
I'm sitting here salivating.
Yes.
Vinegar.
Well, there is balsamic vinegar on the vegetable.
Oh, But you don't put that on very heavy.
It's not a lot. It's probably I don't recall whether it's a tablespoon of oil and a tablespoon of vinegar or something like that.
You just toss that in. But then put in another 2 tablespoons of cider vinegar.
Oh, okay.
With the lentil soup, in the lentil soup, and you'll be very happy. I can't find my recipe, but I vaguely remember it. I had the opportunity to learn some Greek cooking here in town, Mrs. Makris, and she taught us something, and I always got confused with the name of it because it turns out to be a name of Persian rice, but I think it's another form of that word. She called it biryani with a B,
mm-hmm.
And that is any and all vegetables that you can think of, and they're chopped up and sprinkled with a little bit of oil. But the addition of tomato juice, a lot of tomato juice and a lot of oregano and a lot of lemon juice squeezed over that. And then those were baked in the oven and you ate them. I remember having done that quite some time ago. And so you get into that Greek taste of tomato and oregano and lemon juice and the vegetables. And that's a very, very good combination. And you have this big, big plate of vegetables. They were, I think at that particular time, some of them were maybe canned. I'm not sure. Maybe something like carrots might have been put in canned, and maybe even green beans. And I know we had potatoes. And I think that there was either a turnip or a rutabaga or something. And they were diced smaller. But then this whole thing bakes in the oven for a long period of time. And that's another source, a Mediterranean source of roasted vegetables.
Oh, that sounds really good.
It was very, very good. It was a surprise because I'm saying, what? What? Tomato juice? So that cooked up. It was really good.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I guess it's something that I'm maybe noticing more, like it's not some big revelation, but that the addition of a little bit of some acid,
yes,
really wakes
yes,
stuff
it does. Yes,
up.
It does.
And that could be vinegar, or that could be lemon juice
or at the end of cooking,
lime
yes.
juice or something like that. A little acid just
yes.
does something. I'm not exactly sure.
No. That was 1970.
Oh, sorry. So I'm a little bit behind. Oh, no. Well, okay, maybe once or twice. But really, I'm thinking of, you know, your citric acid.
Well, there is a term. And I remember Peter Franklin White, a fellow from England, would always make an issue of you have to acidulate the soup, you have to acidulate this or that,
mm-hmm.
and then I love it with a lot of the Mexican dishes. You know, oh, get some lime out and squeeze some lime, or East Indian lime is put on top of a rice dish, a squeeze of lime juice, and that makes a lot of difference. You're right.
Yeah, and that's why I'm just kind of fond of the really basic old-fashioned hot sauce, because it's got the heat,
yes.
it's got salt, and it's got vinegar.
Yes.
And all those something about all those three things together, and then when you add that to something else, that it's a really adds a spark. And I'm not sure which of those things is most important, whether it's the vinegar part or somehow it's the way that those three things all kind of work together.
Well, I think they do. They're giving you a I think they want to call those condiments that mm-hmm. are on the table, you know. And there always was on our table at home when I was little, that jar of vinegar and hot peppers. And I swear I do not know where Mother got those hot peppers. They were green hot peppers. She didn't grow them. You couldn't buy them. I never saw her buy them. And it was always there. I think she used the same peppers year after year after year, and would boil up vinegar and put them on there, and that was always on the table. And you always had that with if you were eating beans, or especially greens, vinegar. It was always something, spinach or greens. You always doused it with this hot vinegar.
Yeah.
I have seen it available in jars, but I believe it's just one of those things that you just know how to make and you do it. And no one ever asks the question.
Well, that's funny. But we've talked about this before, about how when I was a kid, long, long time ago, my dad grew up in Kentucky. And occasionally when we would go and visit his family, they, on their table, they had that. There was a shaker. It was set on the table. It had white vinegar in it. And it had peppers. And actually, these were one of my uncles grew them.
Oh, did grow them.
He grew them. And that's what it was. It was just a shaker of white vinegar. And I don't know, at one point I realized what it actually was, and it had a couple peppers
uh-huh.
floating in it. And I don't recall ever having seen anybody use it, but it was there. It was on the table. And now I guess I can see, oh, okay, yeah, I can see how you would like that.
Some restaurants in the South have the vinegar available to you. I was trying to think of some other combinations it isn't spice them up, but it enlivens them somewhat. And I made some pickles. Again, I forget who it was. It might have been Jamie Oliver. Oh, I think it was Jamie Oliver that did these fresh pickles. And I thought, oh my gosh, you don't have to cook for hours and wait for weeks. And it was a cucumber that was in nice little pencil sized slices, not slices, links, julienne, kind of a big a big julienne of a cucumber. And I believe there were carrots and cucumber. And what was that third thing? It seems to me it might have even been fennel. No, it was white, and it was white, and it was long. Turnip. It was turnip, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, fresh turnip. That's right. It was a fresh turnip, carrots, and I believe he said you could also use zucchini or courgettes, as they prefer to call them. Why, that's the only French name that the English will allow is courgettes, baby zucchini. And all it was boil up some vinegar and some sugar and a little water. And I don't think that there were any pickling spices. I can't remember what it was, but I am a sucker for sugar and vinegar, that sugar and vinegar combination, mm-hmm. and then you get enough water, and just simply parboil the vegetables after you cut them up in usable sizes, and so that they begin to soften or will take it, and then dump this hot liquid on them and let them sit. They only have to sit a few hours, and ooh, is that good? I mean, sugar and vinegar are really, really something. And as I remember, that's what we used to make coleslaw with, was sugar and vinegar. And I do not know how Mother got the cream in there, but she did. And it did not curdle. And if I tried it, it curdled. I don't know what she did. But her coleslaw was better than anybody else's in the world. And I have tried and tried and tried to make it. I give up and take Marzetti's and use it. Mm-hmm. It's awfully good. And mm-hmm. it's close in that taste. But yeah. And a couple of times, mothers would curdle. I mean, it was, well, I... And it just went on. You had curdled coleslaw once or twice, but you just kept going, you know. I like that.
Yeah. You made me think about, I'm sure that it's been some time, but was watching it at one point, Elton Brown, who did a pickle show.
Oh,
and
yes.
I guess I was kind of surprised by the idea that, yes, you can make pickles, but it doesn't involve all the canning rigmarole. You can make pickles, and then you can put them in the fridge, and as long as you eat them within a week or something.
Oh, I let it go.
For a certain amount of time. But as long as you do, you don't have to go through all the preserving stuff as if you would if you were going to put them on a shelf and keep them. And you can make them, and I'm sure that they would be really good and relatively simple. And then, yeah, put them in the fridge, and as long as you eat them up, no problem.
That's it. And you can't – a thing with those Frigidaire ones, you may retain the liquid, because you're not really eating the liquid. Retain that and keep replenishing the fresh vegetables.
Yeah, as I'm sure as long as the acid content in that bath is high enough, then that's what keeps bad stuff from growing.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
No, I have three or four of those pickles left. They're good as a little condiment on the side. I mean, the old folks weren't crazy. They knew what to do, and they knew what to keep things going. Yes, and you would have those. I mean, I've always laughed at the Pennsylvania Dutch seven sweets and seven sours that you have on the table. And, of course, I found out how sometimes you can stretch what is a sweet and you can stretch to what is a sour. But seven sweets and seven sours. And that wasn't just for the holiday table. That was an everyday thing. Mm. And those acted as condiments, and most of them were vinegary and sweet as a pickle of some sort. A lot of pickled stuff. Pickled peaches, pickled apples, crab apples pickled, and then bread and butter pickles for sure, and chow chow and pickle lily. I finally got those separated. One is made with green peppers, and one is made with green onions, green tomatoes. When you make one with a tomatoes green, and then one is made with peppers and cabbage. But that's another. And then pickled corn, and watermelon rinds. All those things are in this sweet and sour category. Mm-hmm. So that's what you have to pep up your meal a little bit.
We got about 5 minutes left. We're talking with Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. We started out talking about roasting vegetables and things, creative things you can do with the winter vegetables that are what we've got right at this time of year. Something that's maybe a little bit new and can put a little excitement into your life again. And questions, recipes, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Is there another recipe?
I'm thinking of some other additive stuff. I was just going to say this was a funny intuitive thing. I was going to make the mustard sauce. I thought, oh, I'll put a little honey in it. So I reached up for the honey jar, and right next to it was Major Gray chutney. Ooh, ooh! I said, okay, because that was exactly the right thing to have done, was to put Major Gray chutney in there instead of the other sweets, because it also has a little bit of vinegar in it, and it's mango, and it was a nice sweet flavor. It was really, really good. Well, last night I wanted to bake some apples, and I had just a little bit of the Major Gray left. That on top of a baked apple, Major Gray chutney.
Oh, I can see that. Sure.
I can see that, but sure. But again, no one tells you to do these things, and so I'm interested in how people come about some of these combinations. The second combination that I made of the roasted vegetables, maybe I had just said it, was a fennel and a parsnip and a rutabaga, and those seem odd. I mean, odds those, but then it was a matter of, well, God, I think next time I would like to try some leeks. I would chop up leeks and do that. I think that a roasted leek with these sweet and sour flavors would be very good. So I've got some more planning to do. They got leeks in town. You can find those, and they're root vegetables. So anyway, I was very happy with what happened.
Yeah, we just for the past couple winters, I guess, on and off. One of the things that we made is a dish called Country Captain Chicken. You know that?
Oh, that's South Carolina. Yep.
Yeah, and I think maybe one of the things that we like most about it is that they have you for a little bit of a garnish, sort of to finish at the end. You put a little mango chutney on it.
Oh,
which
yes.
is a really, really good. Really good taste. Has a lot of flavor going on there. It has a little bit of sweetness because of the fruit, but also has the vinegar thing, and it has heat in it. And
yes.
So it's spicy, and it's got some other sort of spices and seasonings, that, you know, the kind of things you would think of putting in that kind of a chutney. And it probably has cumin, and as we all know, there ain't nothing that can't be improved by putting some cumin on it. And that maybe is the thing about it, almost, that we like the best.
Well,
it's a nice
right.
dish, but to have that just as a way of sort of finishing it, that little added little layer of flavor put on top of that.
Now, Major Gray really chutney is fake. I have to tell you. That's an Anglo Indian invention in order to satisfy that taste and to take some things that they could remember or whatever. That did come. Chutneys are made, but they're almost always made fresh in India, and so the English wanted something that they could keep or have around, and it ended up being a cooked, but it's different from the rest of the English chutneys. The Major Gray, though, is the one that came right straight from India, and that is a good flavor. I haven't quite got to. I think maybe I would want that on cornbread. I don't think I'd want it on biscuits, but that would be good on cornbread. A nice warm chunk of cornbread with Major Gray chutney would be a treat.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be good?
Okay.
I don't see it on a biscuit, and I don't see it on rye bread, but maybe you did if you put some other things with it.
We're kind of winding down here. Any last sort of thought that you would like to leave with
folks
on this time?
Well,
other than roast your vegetables?
Since it's really, I mean, since there almost isn't any specific, other than roast potatoes, you know. There isn't that much of a specific attention given to it. I would say keep trying various things, because you're not going to destroy any vegetable that you roast, and it gives a totally different attitude toward it. I'm just looking for more combination. Roasted beets. And you don't even peel those. You roast them, and then you peel them after you've roasted them. Is the only oddity with that. But roasted beets are really a treat.
So I have done that in the way that you talked about doing the carrots. I've done that with peeling them, cutting them into chunks, putting them in a little foil packet, and roasting them that way until the end, where you maybe open it up and you sort of finish them up that way. And they're also really very good. And before that, I guess I never would have said that I was a particularly huge fan of the beet. You know, I did not grow up eating borscht or anything like it.
But you were the beet generation.
Yeah. That was a little before my time, my friend.
Oh dear.
Were the beet generation.
Yes, you're right.
That's right. All right. Well, I got to watch that acid. Just a little bit'll do you.
Will do you.
Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence once a month on First Wednesday. He's here. We talk about food and cooking, and always have a good time. And so what are we going to do next time?
Well, I don't know. I haven't.
It'll be April. Rabbit? No.
That is a very difficult subject to talk about, rabbit. I have cooked it, and my friends refuse to eat it. Bunny, no! And I thought, well, all right. I'd use Julia Child's recipes for her stewed rabbit, but other places have rabbit, but... That's a very touchy. No, I don't think we'll do that.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Well, at any rate, hey, thanks very much. We'll see you next time.
Yes.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello.
Tell me about
Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
We're going to take a break here, as we usually do, and when we continue, there'll be more focus, so we hope you'll hang around. Right now, though, we'll have an update on the markets and some news, so stay tuned.